way to communicate with the Ronihan. They stood in a group nearby, looking with hot eyes at the burned bodies around the tree. When Tuvor joined them, they clustered about him as if eager to do whatever he asked, and a moment later they charged out of the glade, scattering in all directions. The lords dismounted, unpacked the sacks of food, and set about preparing a meal on a small Ilionril fire Birinair built for them. Warriors took all the horses upwind from the tree, unsaddled and tethered them. Then the yeomen went to begin digging. Taking great care not to step on any of the dead, Foam Follower moved toward the tree, reached the iron plate. It was immensely heavy, but he lifted it and carried it beyond the ring of the bodies. There he began gently placing corpses on the plate, using it as a sled to move the bodies to their graves. Knots of emotion jumped and bunched across his buttressed forehead, and his eyes flared with a dangerous enthusiasm. For a while, Covenant was the only member of the company without an assigned task. The fact disturbed him. The stench of the dead. Baradakas included somewhere among them, he thought achingly. Baradakas and Laura and children. Children! Made him remember Soaring Woodhelven as he had left it days ago. Tall and proud, lush with the life of a fair people. He needed something to do to defend himself. As he scanned the company, he noticed that the warriors lacked digging tools. They had brought few picks and shovels with them. Most of them were trying to dig with their hands or their swords. He walked over to the tree. Scattered around the trunk were many burned branches, some of them still solid in the core. Though he had to pick his way among the dead, though the close sight of all that flesh smeared like moldering wax over charred bones hurt his guts, he gathered branches that he could not break across his knee. These he carried away from the tree, then used his stone-downer knife to scrape them clean and cut them into stakes. The work blackened his hands. His white robe and the knife twisted awkwardly in his half-fingered grip, but he persisted. The stakes he gave to the warriors, and with them they were able to dig faster. Instead of individual graves, they dug trenches, each deep and long enough to hold a dozen or more of the dead. Using Covenant's stakes, the warriors began to finish their graves faster than Foam Follower could fill them. Late in the afternoon, Prothol called the company to eat. By that time, nearly half the bodies had been buried. No one felt like consuming food with their lungs full of acrid air and their eyes sore of tormented flesh, but the High Lord insisted. Covenant found this strange until he tasted the food. The lords had prepared a stew unlike anything he had eaten in the land. Its savor quickened his hunger, and when he swallowed it, it soothed his distress. It was the first meal he had had since the previous day, and he surprised himself by eating ravenously. Most of the warriors were done eating, and the sun was about to set when their attention was snatched erect by a distant hail. The southmost sentry answered, and a moment later the two missing blood guard came galloping into the glade. Their Ronihan were soaked with sweat. They brought two people with them, a woman and a boy child the size of a four-year-old, both Woodhelven and both marked as if they had survived a battle. The tale of the scouts was quickly told. They had reached the deserted glade and had found the southward trail of the Woodhelvenin's attempted escape, and they had seen some evidence that all the people might not have been killed. Since the enemy had gone, so there was no compelling need to ride back to warn the lords, they had decided to search for survivors. They had erased the signs, so that any returning marauders might not find them, and had ridden south. Early in the afternoon, they found the woman and child fleeing madly without thought or caution. Both appeared injured. The child gave no sign of awareness at all, and the woman vacillated between lucidity and incoherence. She accepted the blood guard as friends, but was unable to tell them anything. However, in a lucid moment, she insisted that an unfettered healer lived a league or two away. Hoping to gain knowledge from the woman, the scouts took her to the cave of the healer. But the cave was empty, and appeared to have been empty for many days. So the scouts brought the two survivors back to Soaring Woodhelven. The two stood before the lords, the woman clutching the child's unresponsive hand. The boy gazed incuriously about him, but did not notice faces or react to voices. When his hand slipped from the woman's, his arm fell limply to his side. He neither resisted nor complied when she snatched it up again. His unfocused eyes seemed preternaturally dark, as if they were full of black blood. The sight of him jabbed Covenant. The boy could have been the future of his own son, Roger, the son of whom he had been dispossessed, reft as if even his fatherhood had been abrogated by leprosy. "Children?" foul, he panted. "Children?" As if in oblique answer to his thoughts, the woman suddenly said, "He is Pietan, son of Sorinal. He likes the horses." "It is true," one of the scouts responded. "He rode before me and stroked the Ranahin's neck." But Covenant was not listening. He was looking at the woman. Confusedly, he sorted through the battle wreckage of her face, the cuts and burns and grime and bruises. Then he said hesitantly, "Laura?" The sun was setting, but there was no sunset. Clouds blanked the horizon, and a short twilight was turning rapidly into night. But as the sun fell, the air became thicker and more sultry, as if the darkness were sweating in apprehension.
"Yes, I know you," the woman said in a flagellated voice. "You are Thomas Covenant, unbeliever and white gold wielder, in the semblance of Beric Halfhand. Jehanum spoke truth. Great evil has come."
She articulated with extreme care, as if she were trying to balance her words on the edge of a sword.
"I am Laura, daughter of Anamar, of the Heirs of Soaring Woodhelven. Our scouts must have been slain. We had no warning. Be—"
But as she tried to say the words, her balance failed, and she collapsed into a hoarse, repeating moan. As if the connection between her brain and her throat broke, leaving her struggling frantically with her inability to speak. Her eyes burned with furious concentration, and her head shook as she tried to form words. But nothing came between her juddering lips except, The Bloodguard scout said, "So she was when we found her. At one moment she can speak, a moment later she cannot." Hearing this, Laura clenched herself violently and pushed down her hysteria, rejecting what the scout said.
"I am Laura,"
she repeated.
"Laura, of the Heirs of Soaring Woodhelven. Our scouts must have been slain. I am Laura. I am Laura," she insisted. "Beware."
Again her voice broke into moaning. Her panic mounted.
"I am Laura. You are the lords. You must li- amb-
As she fought, Covenant glanced around the company. Everyone was staring intently at Laura, and Varial and Tamarantha had tears in their eyes.
"Somebody do something," he muttered painfully. "Somebody."
Abruptly, Laura seemed to collapse. Clutching her throat with her free hands, she shrieked,
"You must hear me,"
and started to fall. As her knees gave way, Prothol stepped forward and caught her. With fierce strength, he gripped her upper arms and held her erect before him.
"Stop," he commanded. "Stop. Do not speak anymore. Listen, and use your head to answer me."
A look of hope flared across Laura's eyes, and she relaxed until Prothol set her on her feet. Then she regained the child's hand.
"Now," the High Lord said levelly, staring deep into her ravaged eyes, "you are not mad. Your mind is clear. Something has been done to you."
Laura nodded eagerly, "Yes."
"When your people attempted to escape, You were captured. She nodded. Yes. You and the child. Yes. And something was done to him as well. Yes. Do you know what it was? She shook her head. No. Was the same done to you both? No. Well, Prothol sighed. Both were captured instead of slain, and the Ervile Lore Master afflicted you. Laura nodded, yes, shuddering. Damaged you. Yes. Caused the difficulty that you now have when you speak. Yes. Now your ability to speak comes and goes. No. No. Prothol paused to consider for a moment, and Covenant interjected, Hellfire, get her to write it down. Laura shook her head, raised her free hand. It trembled uncontrollably. Abruptly, Prothol said, Then there are certain things that you cannot say. Yes. There is something that the attackers do not wish you to speak. Yes. Then, the High Lord hesitated as if he could hardly believe his thoughts. Then the attackers knew that you would be found. By us or others who came too late to the aid of Soaring Woodhelven. Yes. Therefore you fled south, toward Banyan Woodhelven and the Southron Stone Downs. She nodded, but her manner seemed to indicate that he had missed the point. Observing her, he muttered, By the Seven, this cannot do. Such questioning requires time, and my heart tells me we have little. What has been done to the boy? How could the attackers know that we, or anyone, would come this way? What knowledge could she have? Knowledge that an Ervile lore master would fear to have told. No, we must find other means. At the edge of his sight, Covenant saw Varial and Tamarantha setting out their blankets near the campfire. Their action startled him away from Laura for a moment. Their eyes held a sad and curiously secret look. He could not fathom it, but for some reason it reminded him that they had known what Prothol's decision for the quest would be before that decision was made. High Lord, said Birinair stiffly. Concentrating on Laura, Prothol replied, Yes. That young whelp of a Gravelingus, Torm, gave me a Rodomarl gift. I almost thought he mocked me. Laughed because I am not a puppy like himself. It was Hurtloam. Hurtloam? Prothol echoed in surprise. You have some? Have it? Of course. No fool, you know. I keep it moist. Torm tried to teach me, as if I knew nothing. Mastering his impatience, Prothol said, Please bring it. A moment later, Birinair handed to the High Lord a small stoneware pot full of the damp, glittering clay. Hurtloam. Watch out, Covenant murmured with complex memories in his voice. It'll put her to sleep. But Prothol did not hesitate. In darkness lit only by Birinair's Lilianril fire and the last coals of the Riven Tree, he scooped out some of the Hurtloam. Its golden flecks caught the firelight and gleamed. Tenderly, he spread the mud across Laura's forehead, cheeks, and throat. Covenant was marginally aware that Lord Moram no longer attended Prothol and Laura. He had joined Varial and Tamarantha and appeared to be arguing with them. They lay side by side on their backs, holding hands, and he stood over them as if he were trying to ward off a shadow. But they were unmoved. Through his protests, Tamarantha said softly, It is better thus, my son. And Varial murmured, Poor Laura. This is all we can do. Covenant snapped a look around the company. The warriors seemed entranced by the questioning of the here, but Foam Follower's cavernous eyes flicked without specific focus over the glade as if they were weaving dangerous visions. Covenant turned back toward Laura with an ominous chill scrabbling along his spine. The first touch of the Hurtloam only multiplied her distress. Her face tightened in torment, and a rictus like a foretaste of death stretched her lips into a soundless scream.
but then a harsh convulsion shook her, and the crisis passed. She fell to her knees and wept with relief as if a knife had been removed from her mind. Prothol knelt beside her and clasped her in the solace of his arms, waiting without a word for her self-control to return. She needed a moment to put aside her weeping. Then she snatched herself up, crying, "Flee! You must flee! This is an ambush! You are trapped!" But her warning came too late. At the same moment, Tuvor returned from his lookout at a run, followed almost at once by the other blood guard. "Prepare for attack," the first Mark said flatly. "We are surrounded. The Runahin were cut off and could not warn us. There will be battle. We have only time to prepare." Covenant could not grasp the immediacy of what he heard. Prothol barked orders. The camp began to clear. Warriors and blood guard dove into the still empty trenches, hid themselves in the hollow base of the tree. "Leave the horses," Tuvor commanded. "The Runahin will break through to protect them if it is possible." Prothol consigned Laura and the child to Foam Follower, who placed them alone in a grave and covered them with the iron plate. Then Prothol and Morum jumped together into the southmost trench, but Covenant stood where he was. Vaguely he watched Birinair reduce the campfire to its barest embers, then position himself against the burned trunk of the tree. Covenant needed time to comprehend what had been done to Laura. Her plight numbed him. First she had been given knowledge which might have saved the Lords, and then she had been made unable to communicate that knowledge. And her struggles to give the warning only ensured her failure by guaranteeing that the Lords would attempt to understand her rather than ride away. Yet what had been done to her was unnecessary, gratuitous. The trap would have succeeded without it. In every facet of her misery, Covenant could hear Lord Fowl laughing. Banner's touch on his shoulder jarred him. The blood guard said as evenly as if he were announcing the time of day, "Come, Erlord. You must conceal yourself. It is necessary." "Necessary?" Silently, Covenant began to shout, "Do you know what he did to her?" But when he turned, he saw Varial and Tamarantha still lying by the last embers of the fire, protected by only two blood guard. "What?" he gaped. "They'll be killed." At the same time, another part of his brain insisted, "He's doing the same thing to me. Exactly the same thing." To Banner, he groaned, "Don't touch me. Hellfire and bloody damnation. Aren't you ever going to learn?" Without hesitation, Banner lifted Covenant, swung him around, and dropped him into one of the trenches. There was hardly room for him. Foam Follower filled the rest of the grave, squatting to keep his head down. But Banner squeezed into the trench after Covenant, positioned himself with his arms free over the unbeliever. Then a silence full of the aches and quavers of fear fell over the camp. At last, the apprehension of the attack caught up with Covenant. His heart lurched, sweat bled from his forehead, his nerves shrilled as if they had been laid bare. A gray nausea that filled his throat like dirt almost made him gag. He tried to swallow it away and could not. "No," he panted, "not like this. I will not." Exactly the same. Exactly what happened to Laura. A hungry shriek ripped the air. After it came the tramp of approach. Covenant risked a glance over the rim of the grave and saw the glade surrounded by black forms and hot Laval eyes. They moved slowly, giving the encamped figures a chance to taste their own end. And flapping heavily overhead just behind the advancing line was the dark shape of a beast. Covenant recoiled. In fear, he watched the attack like an outcast from a distance. As the Cave Whites and Urviles contracted their ring around the glade, centered their attack on the helpless campsite, the wall of them thickened, reducing at every step the chance that the company might be able to break through their ranks. Slowly their approach became louder. They stamped the ground as if they were trying to crush the grass, and a low wind of mutterings became audible. Soft snarls, hissings through clenched teeth, gurgling, gleeful salivations, blew over the graves like an exhalation littered with the wreckage of mangled lives. The cave whites gasped like lunatics tortured into a love of killing. The nasal sensing of the Urviles sibilated wetly. And behind the other sounds, terrible in their quietness, came the wings of a griffin, drumming a dirge. The tethered horses began to scream. The stark terror of the sound pulled Covenant up, and he looked long enough to see that the mustangs were not harmed. The tightening ring parted to bypass them, and a few cave whites dropped from the attack to unfetter them, lead them away. The horses fought hysterically, but the strength of the cave whites mastered them. Then the attackers were less than 100 feet from the graves. Covenant cowered down as far as he could. He hardly dared to breathe. The whole company was helpless in the trenches. The next moment, a howl went up among the attackers. Several cave whites cried, "Only 5? All those horses? Cheated!" In rage at the puny number of their prey, nearly a third of them broke ranks and charged the campfire. Instantly, the company seized its chance. The Ranahin whinnied. Their combined call throbbed in the air like the shout of trumpets. Together, they thundered out of the east toward the captured horses. Birinair stepped away from the riven tree. With a full swing of his staff and a cry, he struck the burned wood. The tree erupted in flames, threw dazzling light at the attackers. Prothol and Morum sprang together from the southmost trench. Their staffs flared with blue lord's fire. Crying, "Melancharion!" they drove their power against the creatures. The nearest cave whites and Urviles retreated in fear from the flames. Warriors and blood guard leaped out of the graves, sprinted from the hollow of the tree. And behind them came the towering form of Saltheart Foam Follower, shouting a rare, giantish war call. With cries of fear and rage, fire, swift blows, and clashing weapons, the battle began. The company was outnumbered 10-1. Jerking his gaze from scene to scene, Covenant saw how the fighting commenced. The Blood Guard deployed themselves instantly, 2 to defend each lord, with 1 standing by Birinair and another, Banner, warding the trench where Covenant stood. The warriors rapidly formed groups of 5. Guarding each other's backs, they strove to cut their way in and out of the line of the attackers. Morum charged around the fight, trying to find the commanders or loremasters of the enemy. Prothol stood in the center of the battle to give the company a rallying point. He shouted warnings and orders about him. But Foam Follower fought alone. He rampaged through the attack like a berserker, pounding with his fists, kicking, throwing anything within reach. His war call turned into 1 long, piercing snarl of fury. His huge strides kept him in the thick of the fighting. At first, he looked powerful enough to handle the entire host alone. But soon the great strength of the cave whites made itself felt. They jumped at him in bunches. 4 of them were able to bring him down. He was up again in an instant, flinging bodies about him like dolls. But it was clear that if enough cave whites attacked him together, he would be lost. Varial and Tamarantha were in no less danger. They lay motionless under the onslaught, and their 4 blood guards strove extravagantly to preserve them. Some of the attackers risked arrows. The blood guard knocked the shafts aside with the backs of their hands. Spears followed, and then the cave whites charged with swords and staves. Weaponless and unaided, the blood guard fought back with speed, balance, skill, with perfectly placed kicks and blows. They seemed impossibly successful. Soon a small ring of dead and unconscious cave whites encircled the 2 lords. But like Foam Follower, they were vulnerable, would have to be vulnerable to a concerted assault. At Prothol's order, 1 group of warriors moved to help the 4 blood guard. Covenant looked away. He found Morum waging a weird contest with 30 or 40 Urviles. All the Urviles in the attack, they were few in proportion to the cave whites, had formed a fighting wedge behind their tallest member, their lore master, a wedge which allowed them to focus their whole power in the leader. The Lore Master wielded a scimitar with a flaming blade, and against it Morum opposed his fiery staff. The clashing of power showered hot sparks that dazzled and singed the air. Then a swirl of battle swept toward Covenant's trench. Figures leaped over him. Banner fought like a dervish to ward off spears. A moment later, a warrior came to his aid. She was the Woodhelvenin who had assigned herself to Covenant. She and Banner struggled to keep him alive. He clutched his hands to his chest as if to protect his ring. His fingers unconsciously took hold of the metal. Through the dark flash of legs, he caught a glimpse of Prothol, saw that the High Lord was under attack. Using his blazing staff like a lance, he strove with the griffin. The beast's wings almost buffeted him from his feet, but he kept his position and jabbed his blue fire upward. But astride the griffin sat another Ervile Lore Master. The creature used a black stave to block the High Lord's thrusts. As Covenant watched, the desperation of the conflict mounted. Figures fell and rose and fell again. Blood spattered down on him. Across the glade, Foam Follower heaved to his feet from under a horde of cave whites and was instantly deluged. Prothol fell to one knee under the combined force of his assailants. The Ervile Wedge drove Morum steadily backward. The two Bloodguard with him were hard-pressed to protect his back. Covenant's throat felt choked with sand. Already two warriors had fallen among the cave whites around Varial and Tamarantha. At one instant, a Bloodguard found himself, and Tamarantha behind him, attacked simultaneously by three cave whites with spears. The Bloodguard broke the first spear with a chop of his hand and leaped high over the second to kick its wielder in the face. But even his great speed was not swift enough. The third cave white caught him by the arm. Grappling at once, the first latched his long fingers onto the Bloodguard's ankle. The two stretched their captive between them, and their companion jabbed his spear at the Bloodguard's belly. Covenant watched, transfixed with helplessness, as the Bloodguard strained against the cave whites, pulled them close enough together to wrench himself out of the path of the spear. Its tip scored his back. The next instant, he groined both his captors. They dropped him, staggered back. He hit the ground and rolled, but the middle cave white caught him with a kick so hard that it flung him away from Tamarantha. Yelling his triumph, the cave white lunged forward with his spear raised high in both hands to impale the recumbent lord. Tamarantha! Her peril overwhelmed Covenant's fear. Without thinking, he vaulted from the safety of his trench and started toward her. She was so old and frail that he could not restrain himself. The Woodhelvenin yelled, "Down!" His sudden appearance above ground distracted her, gave her opponents a target. As a result, she missed a parry, and a sword thrust opened her side. But Covenant did not see her. He was already running toward Tamarantha, and already too late. The cave white drove his spear downward. At the last instant, the Bloodguard saved Tamarantha by diving across her and catching the spear in his own back. Covenant hurled himself at the cave white and tried to stab it with his stone knife. The blade twisted in his half-hand. He only managed to scratch the creature's shoulder blade. The knife fell from his wrenched fingers. The cave white whirled and struck him to the ground with a slap. The blow stunned him for a moment, but Banner rescued him by attacking the creature. The cave white countered as if elevated, inspired by his success against the dead Bloodguard. He shrugged off Banner's blows, caught him in his long, strong arms, and began to squeeze. Banner struck at the cave white's ears and eyes, but the maddened creature only tightened his grip. Inchoate rage roared in Covenant's ears. Still half-dazed, he stumbled toward Tamarantha's still form and snatched her staff from her side. She made no movement, and he asked no permission. Turning, he wheeled the staff wildly about his head and brought it down with all his strength on the back of the cave white's skull. White and crimson power flashed in a silent explosion. The cave white fell instantly dead. The ignition blinded Covenant for a moment, but he recognized the sick red hue of the flare. As his eyes cleared, he gaped at his hands, at his ring. He could not remember having removed it from the Klingor on his chest, but it hung on his wedding finger and throbbed redly under the influence of the cloud-locked moon. Another cave white loomed out of the battle at him. Instinctively, he hacked with the staff at the creature. It collapsed in a bright flash that was entirely crimson. At the sight, his old fury erupted. His mind went blank with violence. Howling, "Foul!" as if the despiser were there before him, he charged into the thick of the fray. Flailing about him like madness, he struck down another cave white, and another, but he did not watch where he was going. After the third blow, he fell into one of the trenches. Then for a long time, he lay in the grave like a dead man. When he finally climbed to his feet, he was trembling with revulsion. Above him, the battle burned feverishly. He could not judge how many of the attackers had been killed or disabled, but some turning point had been reached. The company had changed its tactics. Prothol fled from the griffin to Foam Follower's aid, and when the giant regained his feet, he turned, dripping blood, to fight the griffin while Prothol joined Morum against the Urviles. Banner held himself over Covenant, but Quan marshaled the survivors of his yeomen to make a stand around Varial and Tamarantha. A moment later, the Ranihan gave a ringing call. Having freed the horses, they charged into the battle, and as their hooves and teeth crashed among the cave whites, Prothol and Morum together swung their flaming staffs to block the Loremaster's downstroke. Its hot scimitar shattered into fragments of lava, and the backlash of power felled the Urvile itself. Instantly, the creatures shifted their wedge to present a new leader, but their strongest had fallen, and they began to give way. On the other side of the battle, Foam Follower caught the griffin by surprise. The beast was harrying the warriors around Varial and Tamarantha. With a roar, Foam Follower sprang into the air and wrapped his arms in a death hug around the body of the griffin. His weight bore it to the ground. They rolled and struggled on the blood-slick grass. The riding Urvile was thrown off, and Quan beheaded it before it could raise its stave. The griffin yowled hideously with rage and pain, tried to twist in Foam Follower's grip to reach him with its claws and fangs. But he squeezed it with all his might, silently braced himself against its thrashings, and strove to kill it before it was able to turn and rend him. For the most part, he succeeded. He exerted a furious jerk of pressure and heard bones retort loudly in the beast's back. The griffin spat a final scream and died. For a moment he rested beside its body, panting hoarsely. Then he lumbered to his feet. His forehead had been clawed open to the bone, but he did not stop. Dashing blood from his eyes, he ran and threw himself full length onto the tight wedge of the Urviles. Their formation crumbled under the impact. At once, the Urviles chose to flee. Before Foam Follower could get to his feet, they were gone, vanished into the darkness. Their defection seemed to drain the cave white's mad courage. The gangrel creatures were no longer able to brave the Lord's fire. Panic spread among them from the brandished staffs, flash firing in the sudden tinder of their hearts. Cry of failure broke through the attack. The cave whites began to run. Howling their dismay, they scattered away from the blazing tree. They ran with grotesque jerkings of their knuckled joints, but their strength and length of limb gave them speed. In moments, the last of them had fled the glade. Foam Follower charged after them. Yelling giantish curses, he chased the fleers as if he meant to crush them all underfoot. Swiftly, he disappeared into the darkness, and soon he could no longer be heard. But from time to time, there came faint screams through the night as he caught escaping cave whites. Tuvor asked Prothol if some of the Blood Guard should join Foam Follower, but the High Lord shook his head. "We have done enough," he panted. "Remember the Oath of Peace." For a time of exhaustion and relief, the company stood in silence, underscored by the gasp of their breathing and the groans of the disabled cave whites. No one moved. To Covenant's ears, the silence sounded like a prayer. Unsteadily, he pulled himself out of the trench. Looking about him with glazed eyes, he took the toll of the battle. Cave whites sprawled around the camp in twisted heaps, nearly 100 of them, dead, dying, and unconscious, and their blood lay everywhere like a dew of death. There were 10 Urviles dead. 5 warriors would not ride again with their yeomen, and none of Quan's command had escaped injury. But of the Blood Guard, only one had fallen. With a groan that belied his words, High Lord Prothol said, "We are fortunate." "Fortunate?" Covenant echoed in vague disbelief. "We are fortunate." An accent of anger emphasized the old roomy rattle of Prothol's voice. "Consider that we might all have died. Consider such an attack during the full of the moon. Consider that while Drool's thoughts are turned here, he is not multiplying defenses in Mount Thunder. We have paid," his voice choked for a moment, "paid but little for our lives and hope." Covenant did not reply for a moment. Images of violence dizzied him. All the Woodhelvenin were dead. Cave whites, Urviles, the warrior who had chosen to watch over him. He did not even know her name. Foam Follower had killed. He himself had killed 5. 5. He was trembling, but he needed to speak, needed to defend himself. He was sick with horror. "Foam Follower's right," he rasped hoarsely. "This is Foul's doing." No one appeared to hear him. The Blood Guard went to the Ranahin and brought their fallen comrade's mount close to the fire. Lifting the man gently, they set him on the Ranahin's back and bound him in place with Klingor thongs. Then together they gave a silent salute, and the Ranahin galloped away, bearing its dead rider toward the western mountains and Guard's Gap. Home. Foul planned the whole thing. When the Ranahin had vanished into the night, some of the Blood Guard tended the injuries of their mounts, while others resumed their sentry duty. Meanwhile, the warriors began moving among the cave whites, finding the living among the dead. All that were not mortally wounded were dragged to their feet and chased away from the camp. The rest were piled on the north side of the tree for a pyre. "It means 2 things." Covenant strove to master the quaver in his voice. "It's the same thing that he's doing to me. It's a lesson, like what happened to Laura. Foul is telling us what he's doing to us because he's sure that knowing won't help. He wants to milk us for all the despair we're worth." With the aid of 2 warriors, Prothol released Laura and Pietin from their tomb. Laura looked exhausted to the limit. She was practically prostrate on her feet. But little Pietin ran his hands over the blood-wet grass, then licked his fingers. Covenant turned away with a groan. "The other thing is that Fowl really wants us to get at Drool. To die or not. He tricked Drool into this attack so that he wouldn't be busy defending himself. So Fowl must know what we're doing, even if Drool doesn't." Prothol seemed troubled by the occasional distant screams, but Morum did not notice them. While the rest of the company set about their tasks, the Lord went and knelt beside Varial and Tamarantha. He bent over his parents, and under his red, stained robe, his body was rigid. "I tell you, this is all part of Foul's plan. Hellfire, are you listening to me?" Abruptly, Morum stood and faced Covenant. He moved as if he were about to hurl a curse at Covenant's head. But his eyes bled with tears, and his voice wept as he said, "They are dead. Varial and Tamarantha, my parents. Father and mother of me, body and soul." Covenant could see the hue of death on their old skin. "It cannot be," one of the warriors cried. "I saw. No weapon touched them. They were kept by the Blood Guard." Prothol hastened to examine the 2 lords. He touched their hearts and heads, then sagged and sighed, "Nevertheless." Both Varial and Tamarantha were smiling. The warriors stopped what they were doing, In silence, the yeoman put aside its own fatigue and grief to stand bowed in respect before Morum and his dead. Stooping, Morum lifted both Varial and Tamarantha in his arms. Their thin bones were light in his embrace, as if they had lost the weight of mortality. On his cheeks, tears gleamed orangely, but his shoulders were steady, unsob-shaken, to uphold his parents. Covenant's mind was beclouded. He wandered in mist, and his words were wind-torn from him.
"Do you mean to tell me that we... that I... we... for a couple of corpses?"
Morum showed no sign of having heard, but a scowl passed like a spasm across Prothol's face, and Quan stepped to the unbeliever's side at once, gripped his elbow, whispered into his ear,
"If you speak again, I will break your arm."
"Don't touch me," Covenant returned, but his voice was forceless. He submitted, swirling in lost fog. Around him, the company took on an attitude of ritual. Leaving his staff with one of the warriors, High Lord Prothol retrieved the staffs of the dead lords and held them like an offering across his arms. And Morum turned toward the blaze of the tree with Varial and Tamarantha clasped erect in his embrace. The silence quivered painfully. After a long moment, he began to sing. His rough song sighed like a river, and he sang hardly louder than the flow of water between quiet banks.
"Death reaps the beauty of the world, bundles old crops to hasten new. Be still, heart, hold peace. Growing is better than decay. I hear the blade which severs life from life. Be still, peace, hold heart. Death is passing on, the making way of life and time for life. Hate, dying, and killing, not death. Be still, heart. Make no expostulation. Hold peace and grief, and be still."
As he finished, his shoulders lurched as if unable to bear their burden without giving at least one sob to the dead.
"Ah, Creator,"
he cried in a voice full of bereavement.
"How can I honor them? I am stricken at heart and consumed with the work that I must do. You must honor them, for they have honored you."
At the edge of the firelight, the Ranahin Hynarel gave a whinny like a cry of grief. The great roan mare reared and pawed the air with her forelegs, then whirled and galloped away eastward. Then Morum murmured again, "Be still, heart. Make no expostulation. Hold peace and grief, and be still." Gently he laid Varial on the grass and lifted Tamarantha in both arms. Calling hoarsely,
"Hail!"
he placed her into the cleft of the burning tree. And before the flames could blacken her age-etched skin, he lifted Varial and set him beside her, calling again, "Hail!" Their shared smile could be seen for a moment before the blaze obscured it. So they lay together in consummation.
"Already dead,"
Covenant groaned.
"That bloodguard was killed. Oh, Morum."
In his confusion, he could not distinguish between grief and anger. His eyes now dry, Morum turned to the company, and his gaze seemed to focus on Covenant.
"My friends, be still at heart,"
he said comfortingly. "Hold peace for all your grief. Varial and Tamarantha are ended.
Who could deny them?
They knew the time of their death. They read the close of their lives in the ashes of Soaring Woodhelven, and were glad to serve us with their last sleep. They chose to draw the attack upon themselves so that we might live. Who will say that the challenge which they met was not great? Remember the oath, and hold peace." Together the yeomen made the heart-opening salute of farewell, arms spread wide as if uncovering their hearts to the dead.
Then Quan cried, "Hail!" and led his warriors back to the work of piling cave whites and burying Woodhelvenin. After the yeomen had left, High Lord Prothol said to Morim, "Lord Varyol's staff, from father to son, take it. If we survive this quest to reach a time of peace, master it. It has been the staff of a High Lord." Morim accepted it with a bow. Prothol paused for a moment, irresolute, then turned to Covenant. "You have used Lord Tamarantha's staff. Take it for use again. You will find it readier to aid your ring than your higher brand's staff. The Lilianril work in other ways than the Lord's, and you are Ur-Lord Thomas Covenant." Remembering the red blaze which had raged out of that wood to kill and kill, Covenant said, "Burn it." A touch of danger tightened Morim's glance, but Prothol shrugged gently, took Lord Tamarantha's staff to the fire, and placed it into the cleft of the tree. For an instant, the metal ends of the staff shone as if they were made of verdigris. Then Morim cried, "Where the tree?" Quickly, the company moved away from the fiery spars. The staff gave a sharp report like the bursting of bonds. Blue flame detonated in the cleft, and the riven tree dropped straight to the ground in fragments, collapsing as if its core had been finally killed. The heap of wood burned furiously. From a distance, Covenant heard Birinair snort, "The unbeliever's doing," as if that were a calumny. "Don't touch me," he muttered to himself. He was afraid to think. Around him, darkness lurked like vulture wings made of midnight. Horrors threatened. He felt ghoul begotten. He could not bear the bloodiness of his ring, could not bear what he had become. He searched about him as if he were looking for a fight. Unexpectedly, Saltheart Foamfollower returned. He shambled out of the night like a massacre metaphored in flesh, an icon of slaughter. He was everywhere smeared in blood, and much of it was his own. The wound on his forehead covered his face with a dark, wet sheen, and through the stain his deep eyes looked sated and miserable. Shreds of cave-white flesh still clung to his fingers. Pietin pointed at the giant and twisted his lips in a grin that showed his teeth. At once Laura grabbed his hand, pulled him away to a bed which the warriors had made for them. Prothol and Morim moved solicitously toward the giant, but he pushed past them to the fire. He knelt near the blaze as if his soul needed warming, and his groan as he sank to his knees sounded like a rock cracking. Covenant saw his chance, approached the giant. Foamfollower's manifest pain brought his confused, angry grief to a pitch that demanded utterance. He himself had killed 5 cave whites. 5! His ring was full of blood. "Well," he snarled, "that must have been fun. I hope you enjoyed it." From the other side of the camp, Quan hissed threateningly. Prothol moved to Covenant's side, said softly, "Do not torment him. Please. He is a giant. This is the Camorra, the fire of grief. Has there not been enough pain this night?" "I killed 5 cave whites," Covenant cried in bereft fury. But Foamfollower was speaking as if entranced by the fire and unable to hear them. His voice had a keening sound. He knelt before the fire in an attitude of lament. "Ah, brothers and sisters, did you behold me? Did you see my people? We have come to this. Giants, I am not alone. I feel you in me, your will in mine. You would not have done differently, not felt other than I felt, not grieved apart from my grief. This is the result. Stone and sea, we are diminished. Lost home and weak seed have made us less than we were. Do we remain faithful even now?
Ah, faithful? My people, if steadfastness leads to this, look upon me. Do you find me admirable? I stink of hate and unnecessary death.
A chill blew through his words. Tilting back his head, he began a low chant. His threnody went on until Covenant felt driven to the brink of screaming. He wanted to hug or kick the giant to make him cease. His fingers itched with mounting frenzy. Stop, he moaned. I can't stand it. A moment later, Foam Follower bowed his head and fell silent. He remained still for a long time as if he were preparing himself. Then he asked, flatly, Who has been lost?
Very few, Prothol answered. We were fortunate. Your valor served us well.
Who? Foam Follower ached. With a sigh, Prothol named the five warriors, the Bloodguard, Varial, and Tamarantha.
Stone and sea, the giant cried. With a convulsion of his shoulders, he thrust his hands into the fire.
The warriors gasped. Prothol stiffened at Covenant's side. But this was the giantish Camera, and no one dared interfere. Foam Follower's face stretched in agony, but he held himself still. His eyes seemed to bulge in their sockets, yet he kept his hands in the fire as if the blaze could heal, or at least sear the blood on them, cauterize if it could not assuage the stain of shed life. But his pain showed in his forehead. The hard heart pulse of hurt broke the crust on his wound. New blood dripped around his eyes and down his cheeks into his beard. Panting, Hellfire, Hellfire, Covenant pushed away from Prothol. Stiffly, he went close to the kneeling giant. With a fierce effort that made him sound caustic in spite of his intent, he said, Now somebody really ought to laugh at you. His jutting head was barely as high as the giant's shoulder. For a moment, Foam Follower gave no sign of having heard. But then his shoulders slumped. With a slow exertion, almost as though he were reluctant to stop torturing himself, he withdrew his hands. They were unharmed. For some reason, his flesh was impervious to flame, but the blood was gone from them. They looked as clean as if they had been scrubbed by exoneration. His fingers were still stiff with hurt, and he flexed them painfully before he turned his bloody face toward Covenant. As if he were appealing a condemnation, he met the unbeliever's impacted gaze and asked,
Do you feel nothing?
Feel, Covenant groaned. I'm a leper.
Not even for tiny Pietan? A child?
His appeal made Covenant want to throw his arms around the giant, accept this terrible sympathy as some kind of answer to his dilemma. But he knew it was not enough, knew in the deepest marrow of his leprosy that it did not suffice. We killed them too, he croaked. I killed. I'm no different than they are. Abruptly he turned, walked away into the darkness to hide his shame. The battleground was a fit and proper place for him. His nostrils were numbed to the stink of death. After a time, he stumbled, then lay down among the dead, on blood surrounded by graves and pyres.
Children.
He was the cause of their screams and their agony. Foul had attacked the Woodhelven because of his white gold ring.
Not again. I won't.
His voice was empty of weeping. I will not do any more killing. Chapter 18. The Plains of Ra. Despite the battleground, despite the acrid smoke of flame and flesh and power, despite the nearby trenches where the dead were graved like lumps of charred agony, piled wearily into the earth like accumulated pain for which only the ground could now find use or surcease. Despite his own inner torn and trampled ground, Covenant slept. For what was left of the night,
The other survivors of the battle labored to bury or burn the various dead, but Covenant slept. Restless unconsciousness arose from within him like a perpetually enumerated VSE, and he spent his repose telling in dreams that rigid round. Left arm, shoulder to wrist, left hand, palm and back, each finger, right arm, shirt, chest, left leg. He awoke to meet a dawn which wore the aspect of an uncomfortable tomb. Shuddering himself to his feet, he found that all the work of burying was done. Each of the trenches was filled, covered with dirt, and planted with a sapling which Birinair had found somewhere. Now most of the warriors lay awkwardly on the ground, in fatigue, searching themselves for some kind of strength. But Prothol and Morum were busy cooking a meal, and the Blood Guard were examining and readying the horses. A spate of disgust crossed Covenant's face. Disgust that he had not done his share of the work. He looked at his robe. The samite was stiff and black with encrusted blood. Fit apparel for a leper, he thought. An outcast. He knew that it was past time for him to make a decision. He had to determine where he stood in his impossible dilemma. Propped on his staff in the sepulchral dawn, he felt that he had reached the end of his evasions. He had lost track of his self-protective habits, lost the choice of hiding his ring, lost even his tough boots. And he had shed blood. He had brought down doom on Soaring Woodhelven. He had been so preoccupied with his flight from madness that he had not faced the madness toward which his fleeing took him. He had to keep moving. He had learned that. But going on posed the same impenetrable problem. Participate and go mad, or refuse to participate and go mad. He had to make a decision, find bedrock somewhere and cling to it. He could not accept the land and could not deny it. He needed an answer. Without it, he would be trapped like Laura, forced to the tune of Fowl's Glee to lose himself in order to avoid losing himself. Then Morum looked up from his stirring and saw the disgust and dismay on Covenant's face. Gently the Lord said, "What troubles you, my friend?" For a moment Covenant stared at Morum. The Lord looked as if he had become old overnight. The smoke and dirt of battle marked his face, accentuating the lines on his forehead and around his eyes like a sudden aggravation of wear and decay. His eyes seemed dulled by fatigue, but his lips retained their kindness, and his movements, though draped in such a rent and bloodied robe, were steady. Covenant flinched instinctively away from the tone in which Morum said, "My friend." He could not afford to be anyone's friend. And he flinched away too from his impulse to ask what had caused Tamarantha's staff to become so violent in his hands. He feared the answer to that question. To cover his wincing, he turned roughly away and went in search of Foam Follower. The giant was sitting with his back to the last standing, extinguished fragment of Soaring Woodhelven. Grime and blood darkened his face. His skin had the color of a flaw in the heart of a tree. But the wound on his forehead dominated his appearance. Ripped flesh hung over his brows like a foliage of pain, and through the wound, drops of new blood seeped as if red thoughts were making their way from a crack in his skull. He had his right arm wrapped around his great jug of diamond rot, and his eyes followed Laura as she tended little Pieton. Covenant approached the giant, but before he could speak, Foam Follower said, "Have you considered them? Do you know what has been done to them?" The question raised black echoes in Covenant's mind. "I know about her."
"And Pieton? Tiny Pieton? A child?"
Covenant shrugged awkwardly.
"Think, unbeliever."
His voice was full of swirling mists.
"I am lost. You can understand."
With an effort, Covenant replied, "The same thing. Just exactly what's been done to us. And Alora." A moment later, he added mordantly, "And to the Cave Whites." Foam Follower's eyes shied, and Covenant went on, "We're all going to destroy whatever we want to preserve. The essence of Fowl's method. Peyton is a present to us, an example of what we're going to do to the land when we try to save it. Fowl is that confident, and prophecies like that are self-fulfilling." At this, Foam Follower stared at Covenant as if the unbeliever had just laid a curse on him. Covenant tried to hold the giant's eyes, but an unexpected shame made him drop his head. He looked at the power-scorched grass. The burning of the grass was curious. Some patches did not look as wrong as others. Apparently, Lord's fire did less essential damage than the might of the Urviles. After a moment, Foam Follower said, "You forget that there is a difference between a prophet and a seer. Seeing the future is not prophecy." Covenant did not want to think about it. To get away from the subject, he demanded, "Why didn't you get some of that hurt loam for your forehead?" This time, Foam Follower's eyes turned away. Distantly, he said, "There was none left." His hands opened and closed in a gesture of helplessness. "Others were dying, and others needed the hurt loam to save their arms or legs. And," his voice stumbled momentarily, "and I thought Tiny Peyton might be helped." "He is only a child," he insisted, looking up suddenly with an appeal that Covenant could not understand. "But one of the cave whites was dying slowly, in such pain." A new trickle of blood broke open in his forehead and began to drip from his brow. "Stone and sea," he moaned. "I could not endure it. Heartthrall Birinair kept aside a touch of hurt loam from me, from all the wounds to be treated. But I gave it to the cave white. Not to Peyton, to the cave white. Because of the pain." Abruptly, he put back his head and took a long pull of diamond draught. With the heel of his palm, he wiped roughly at the blood on his brows. Covenant gazed intently at the giant's racked visage. Because he could find no other words for his sympathy, he asked, "How are your hands?" "My hands?" Foam Follower seemed momentarily confused, but then he remembered. "Ah, the camera. My friend, I am a giant," he explained. "No ordinary fire can harm me. But the pain teaches many things." A flinch of self-disgust crossed his lips. "It is said that the giants are made of granite," he mumbled. "Do not be concerned for me." On an impulse, Covenant responded, "In parts of the world where I come from, there are little old ladies who sit by the side of the road pounding away all day on hunks of granite with little iron hammers. It takes a long time, but eventually they turn big pieces into little pieces." Foam Follower considered briefly before asking, "Is that prophecy, Ur-Lord Covenant?" "Don't ask me. I wouldn't know a prophecy if it fell on me."
"Nor would I," said Foam Follower.
A dim smile tinged his mouth. Shortly, Lord Morum called the company to the meal he and Prothol had prepared. Through a haze of suppressed groans, the warriors pried themselves to their feet and moved toward the fire. Foam Follower lurched upright. He and Covenant followed Laura and Peyton to get something to eat. The sight and smell of food suddenly brought Covenant's need for decision to a head. He was empty, hollow with hunger. But when he reached out to take some bread, he saw how his arm was befouled with blood and ashes. He had killed. The bread dropped from his fingers. "This is all wrong," he murmured. Eating was a form of acquiescence, a submission to the physical actuality of the land. He could not afford it. "I've got to think." The emptiness in him ached with demands, but he refused them. He took a drink of spring wine to clear his throat, then turned away from the fire with a gesture of rejection. The lords and foam follower looked after